The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Friday, it's the bonus show. Wow. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really good. And, you know, one must know, and we have to be blunt, where the hearings eventually went to after the Democrats realized that they had nowhere to go.
Right.
Just had nowhere to go, and it got down to this.
Have you, I don't know if it's boofed or boofed. How do you pronounce that?
That refers to flatulence. We were 16.
Okay. And so when your friend Mark Judge said the same, put the same thing in his yearbook page back to you, he had the same meaning. It was flatulence.
I don't know what he did, but that's my recollection. We want to talk about flatulence at age 16 on a yearbook page. I'm game.
Those were the most important words that were uttered today, along with the words, I still like beer.
I will admit that was a great line. But that's actually, that's where it led to. And you and I had said this, and unless there was new information that came out, there was no information that came out.
Right.
There was no place to go. And so to start out today's show, we're going to start out like we did on yesterday's show.
Mm-hmm.
That we understand that throughout the show today, that many of our listeners and callers will bring up what they think was the highlight, the gotcha moment, you know, or what they were most impressed by. I'm sure Lindsey Graham will come up from a lot of people. Some of the things that Dr. Ford said. We've got some audio coming up too. You know, one of the things where, okay, you got caught in a lie about the airplane, which didn't seem a big thing at the time, but if you're a prosecutor and you're trying to get to the point of credibility, when you realize, oh, so you really would have flown in, but you wanted them to come to you, which, by the way, they agreed to do, and how didn't you know that? Did your lawyers keep that from you? That was really pretty interesting stuff. I thought people might have thought, well, that's just a small minutia. And it's not, because it gets to the point of, if you're willing to lie about that, what else are you willing to lie about?
Right.
But when it comes down to it, before we get to the minutia, which I'm sure people will, and the point that they say, well, that was it. That was the gotcha point there. We learned nothing yesterday. We didn't learn anything about the substance of the actual allegation.
Right.
We still don't know where it happened. We still don't know when we're talking about the sexual assault. We don't know where it happened. We don't know when it happened. We don't know how she got there. We don't know how she got home. We don't know who else was there. We really don't know anything still about her original allegation. And I started thinking to try to encapsulate it, what we saw yesterday, and I realized, oh, all I have to do is repeat the beginning of yesterday's show when we started talking about it, which is the left is attempting to change the definition of words. And we saw this initially when a serious allegation became a credible allegation. And we quickly attacked that mindset and said, wait a minute, hold it. No, it can be a serious allegation. Anybody can make a serious allegation. Eric's trying to murder me. He's poisoning my coffee every morning. That's a serious allegation. Does it make it a credible allegation?
And a false allegation, because it's not in the morning. It's in the evening.
In the, what did I say?
You said morning, and I'm just claiming that it's a false allegation.
Oh, because it's in the evening.
I'm poisoning your coffee in the evening.
Yes, because I have the coffee before we go on the air.
Right. Yes.
Which is, so technically that would still be evening. Okay.
Yes,
all right.
I yield my time back to Mr. McNamara.
All right, let's get back to flatulence.
Somehow I believe we probably will anyway.
Well, we did you see Ann Coulter? His response to that?
No.
After that back and forth, she said, now we're talking about, quote, farts, end of quote.
Right.
And hashtag me toot.
Okay.
Like, oh, wow.
All right.
I think it's very important, by the way, because it's a very important point, because it brings you to the point. Because remember, the Democrats are the prosecution.
Right.
And when you get to that particular point in a yearbook, that's when people started saying, oh, my God, you've got nothing. You got nothing against this guy if that's where you're going. But back to the definition of words. The serious allegation became credible. If it's serious, it's credible. Well, that's ridiculous. You can make a serious allegation and it's not credible at all. And everybody knows it's not credible. And, you know, we got all of that yesterday again. Well, I find that she's credible after, you know, she gave her testimony. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Credibility is not based upon, is not based upon the seriousness of the allegation, or, as was said yesterday, well, she was believable because she was so emotional. Something happened. She was believable. No. She wasn't credible or believable. She might have been sympathetic. You might have felt sympathy towards her. You might have said, okay, I believe something probably happened to her. I don't know what it is. But because you feel sympathetic does not evolve into credibility. It simply evolves into you're sympathetic over her.
Mm-hmm.
She's a sympathetic figure for whatever happened to her. And people then jump, and the media jumps to sympathy. If you feel sympathy, that means that she becomes credible in your eyes. The only thing that makes you credible is the evidence that exists, and that's it. And none of that changed yesterday. It's still her making the allegation, because she came across to me as, I try to put myself in the place of just an investigator, you know, she, as we've done on many, many things out there, she came across as a sympathetic figure who was completely confused and got caught in telling some untruths that might seem minor, but go to the point of, okay, wait a minute, if you're willing to lie about that, what else are you willing to lie about? Which is the thought that goes into your head. But she came across, if I was just an investigator and met her for the first time and had no biases whatsoever, she was a sympathetic figure who was confused, who really couldn't remember, was confused about almost every single detail, contradicted herself on many different details, got caught in some untruths. The only thing she was 100% clear on was that he was the one that did it.
Yeah.
And so when you add those things up together, that does not equal credibility. It equals a witness who has an allegation that, and the other point is the witnesses that she said were there all have said, don't know about this and it didn't happen. So that also goes to the credibility or the non-credibility of a particular witness.
Right.
And so that's what I got out of her. And that was really it. And so nothing has changed at all. I know that there were a ton of people that were really disappointed in the first half of it and weren't happy with the prosecution from the Republican side, who I think that they believed, and we wondered, we weren't sure, was she going to play, the actual prosecutor as being more unbiased? And many people, including myself, tend to believe that that's the role that she looked at it at. She was the prosecutor for both sides. And that, I believe, infuriated a lot of Republicans who wanted her to be the pit bull for the Republicans, and she did not come off that way, in my opinion.
Right.
I don't know if you thought she came off as a pit bull for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't sense that.
No.
And so that infuriated a lot. But in the end, I do think that because of the testimony of Kavanaugh and because of Lindsey Graham, they were able to communicate, at least to me, I don't know about other people, they were communicate to me that it's a he said, she said, that she is not a credible witness because of what I've just stated before. Mm-hmm. And they were able to refocus it, in my opinion, later on in the day. If you only watched the first couple of hours, you probably came away with a completely different opinion. But by the end of the day, you looked at it and you said, the Democrats are scum. They were trying to hide it. They really didn't care about her. And that was brought up. I think Senator Tillis of North Carolina brought it up about, you know, and so did Lindsey Graham, that you didn't care about her. This wasn't about her. You don't care about sexual assault. It had nothing to do with her. You were just trying to do whatever you could to stall this. And if you destroyed somebody's character, because if you really wanted the investigation, you could have got the investigation done.
Mm-hmm.
You could have done it. You didn't want to do an investigation.
Well, and you know what? This is the stronger point. We've been talking about how Feinstein had the opportunity to actually make that happen, to look into this and to vet the claim. Well, why would you not do that? She claims because she wanted to keep the source, the person making the claim, anonymous. She wanted to keep her name from coming out. Well, you can do that. You can conduct the investigation while keeping her name secret. You can vet that situation. You can look into it. But what happens if you're a Senator Feinstein and you don't buy it or know that there's not enough there to go on and would never be enough to go on? Then you hold it to the last possible minute when you know there's no time for an investigation. You hold it to the last minute when politically you can call for an investigation knowing an investigation is not going to happen. And then you try and muster up or bring people together to build political support against Kavanaugh's nomination. That's what you do. You play it as an ace in your sleeve, knowing that you can't really vet the situation because you know that there's no way to prove her claim, that it's really not going to stand up. This was the best they were going to get, is Dr. Ford in front of the Senate committee.
Modern social media, too, I did see how a lot of the left on social media had moved the goalpost by the end of the day.
Yes.
And moving the goalpost was, well, not that he's absolutely guilty and we're sure we did it, but, well, even if he's not guilty, the fact that he blew up like that shows he doesn't have the temperament to be a Supreme Court justice, so they should vote no. I'm like, wow, the goalpost changed.
Right.
Which, of course, the response is, well, he was so angry. He was a partisan. Well, if you're accused of rape and you don't believe that you committed the rape, you're going to be a partisan, too.
You're going to be very
in the
angry.
Defense of yourself.
You're going to be very angry.
It was, but it was interesting how they changed the goalpost, which showed, I believe, how effective he actually was. So we've got audio cuts coming up. We want to hear from you. If you want to get aboard, lines are open. We would love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE. Plus, like I said, we've got audio and more analysis of it. But really, the big picture is nothing changed here.
No, there was no change. We knew, and because we knew that there was nothing going to be presented in terms of evidence, there's really nowhere to go. She claims it happened. He says it did not. End of story.
Right. There's no forensic evidence. There's no witnesses. The witnesses that she actually named have denied it or have no knowledge of it ever happening. And
which side has more inconsistencies in the story? Which side, whose story has changed more?
Hers. Yeah. And so, as I said, if I'm somebody who's just an investigator in this and don't take either side, you confirm them. And if information comes later on and there are witnesses to do it, you can always impeach them later on.
Sure. If there were hard evidence, if there's something definitive in nature, then we have a process to deal with that.
If you want to get in, lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy.
Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday. We'll have more extended audio from Lindsey Graham coming up here in just a little bit. And audio throughout the night, too, plus your calls and comments. 866-90-RED-EYE if you would like to get in. But we expected this. We said unless the prosecutor is able to get new information out of her, unless there's new information that they have decided to spring, on the committee yesterday, and I'm talking about Ford's lawyers, other than that, there would be no new information coming out of it. And we were exactly right. I mean, the Democrats at the end, as we said, they were questioning Kavanaugh, even veered off that topic, and we're getting into things that were written in his yearbook.
Yeah.
To the point of yes, passing gas. Yeah. And I think, you know, at that point the average, I think, if somebody stayed with it or saw that, and they're the average casual viewer, the independent out there, they had to look at that and just say, you got to be kidding me.
Right.
You're really kidding me. You're talking about what somebody did at 16 years old and put in their yearbook. And so that's where we are right now. Nothing has changed. All the questions still remain. It's still just her allegation with no forensic evidence, no corroboration, no witnesses who have supported her version at all that were there at that time. We still don't know, again, where did this happen? When did it happen? How she arrived there? How she got home? Who else was there? All those still completely unanswered. I don't know what she went through, and neither does anybody else, for those senators to come out. And one of the points that was made, I forgot who made it on Twitter yesterday, saying, you know, they're not saying that, you know, that they believe her because of the alleged, sexual assault from him.
Right.
They're making it as if he did it. They've come to the conclusion that he did it.
Yes.
And that's where it gets out of line, and that's where Lindsey Graham, I think, lost it, because he knows that nobody knows what happens. And to give that definitive opinion means, as we've talked about all week, the message that came out of this is women must always be believed and men are liars.
Yes.
And the other thing, that because of his judicial decisions, that is evidence and proof that he would attempt to rape a woman.
And it was as if they were stating fact.
Yes.
And in a case like that, you don't have the facts because you don't have the proof to back it up. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
All right, we're starting to see that fall time pattern emerge. And what we get here are these big pools of colder air out of Canada moving into the northern tier and Midwest states. Chicago, for instance, today will be around 70 degrees. Tomorrow's high, 62 in the Windy City. A lingering front in the southeast may produce heavy rain and strong to severe thunderstorms today. Gusty winds and continued dry conditions are keeping fire weather threats critical in the Great Basin and Rockies region. Areas today prone to flash flood watches and warnings would include southern Texas, especially the western Gulf counties, and eastern Tennessee and northern Alabama. Daytime highs today in L.A., 89, tomorrow 83. For New York City, we'll see 69 degrees today with some rain showers. Miami, 88 in thunderstorms. Dallas, 85 under sunny skies. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thank you so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The Bona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
Okay. May I ask, Dr. Ford, how did you get to Washington?
In an airplane.
Okay. I asked that because it's been reported by the press that you would not submit to an interview with the committee because of your fear of flying. Is that true?
Well, I was hoping that they would come to me, but then I realized that was an unrealistic request.
It would have been a quicker trip for me.
Yes.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she got caught. Now, there's two things here. First off, they were willing and always have been willing to go to her.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't she know that? Or did she know it? Were there two lies there?
Right. Because I think it was Grassley who actually made that part of a tweet last weekend that Dr. Ford and her attorney should know that we will accommodate and including we traveling to her if necessary.
So did her attorneys not tell her that?
Right.
Because he announced that they had done it, but when they first initiated it, they didn't make it known to the press.
Right.
It was only after a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So did her attorneys not tell her that?
Right.
Were her attorneys not looking out for her best interest? Or did she tell two lies? It has to be one or the other, right?
It has to be one of those.
What are the possibilities? Because she admitted, well, okay, I'm really not afraid to fly. I just wanted them to come to me. All right, then you lied.
Right.
Now, it may seem small, but that any prosecutor will do that. Okay, we're setting up a pattern here. If you're willing to lie about something simple like that, what else did you lie about?
Right.
Would be what you're trying to do at that particular point. So.
Well, and they also know that if they go to her, it could have damaged the circus. This was always about being on television. This was always about doing this in front of the American people. You know, when they even were talking about, well, we offered to do that behind closed doors. Well, that wasn't going to work because that doesn't work for the agenda. And I'm talking about the way the Democrats wanted this to be on full display. And so that could have been the undoing of it right there. Well, we can't have the committee go to her because there's a chance that wouldn't be televised. So if you look at each side, and I realize Judge Kavanaugh's position is really simple. It didn't happen. He wasn't there. But whose story has wavered? The burden of proof is on the accuser. Those making the charge always carry the burden of proof. That's the way it goes, and it doesn't matter whether this is a court of law or not. If we're to say that it doesn't, then, gosh, I mean, when you look at a man calls and tells police his wife is missing, you know who the number one suspect is right away? People aren't showing him sympathy because he has a missing wife, because he's a victim and because he's grieving over his missing wife. Police look into him from the beginning. He's the first suspect.
Now, this is interesting. This is from Rich Lowry from a few hours ago, National Review.
Mm.
My understanding is that Rachel Mitchell, despite her lackluster performance at the hearing, was helpful at the conference meeting explaining how there was no corroboration for Ford's account. In fact, negative corroboration, which means the witnesses that she used didn't back her up.
Right. She claims that she had corroboration, and in fact, that did not.
She did not have it.
She did not produce that. That did not materialize. So that falls in the negative column, which means there's zero there except for her claim.
Got pretty brutal on social media yesterday.
It really did. As you know, when you saw it after the break and Kavanaugh started testifying, and then you got to the point with Lindsey Graham, I mean, this thing really came to, I think, the mushroom cloud that it was going to be. I don't know that it could have turned out any other way because of, and it was, I guess, in the back of my mind, I kind of expected that. You and I didn't really talk about it or predict that it would end in such fashion with either Senator Lindsey Graham or Kavanaugh and his emotion tied to it. We knew that there would be a great deal of emotion, but it should have been a given if it wasn't, because of the fact that we saw what was going on anecdotally on this program. We haven't had this kind of reaction to a story, an ongoing story, since the election season of 2016.
No, this is the story. I won't say the I will say it is the biggest story when it comes to passion of Republicans and conservatives and even never Trumpers. It was mm-hmm. interesting because just watching Twitter yesterday and watching it just explode, that when Kavanaugh was defending himself, my never Trumper, the acquaintances on social media that are never Trumpers that I've mentioned here in the last couple of weeks that have completely come around to defend Kavanaugh. As soon as Kavanaugh started speaking, they were like, yes. And when Lindsey Graham came out, they were like, yes. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is some of the never Trumpers that I know out there that, over the last 2 years, a lot of, their Twitter friends, whatever, what do they call them? It's not Facebook friends. What is it? Twitter
followers.
Followers, thank mm-hmm. you very much. Yes, mm-hmm. Twitter. You're not a friend on Twitter. There mm-hmm. are no friends.
Well, I'm wondering who the leader is if everybody's following.
Yeah, you're a follower, but a lot of the followers mm-hmm. That they've had discussions over the years, and these followers are not Republicans.
Right.
And you've had a lot of these never Trumpers sort of aligned with Democrats that absolutely hate Trump, mm-hmm. even though the never Trumpers claim to be more conservative. It was really interesting yesterday to see these never Trumpers defend Kavanaugh, and all of a sudden they're getting into massive fights with people that they were aligned with or allied with just a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And it just has completely changed. And I thought that was fascinating. But just part of how brutal it got on social media yesterday, Maria Shriver.
Hmm.
She posts a picture on Twitter of Lindsey Graham. Yeah. Like screaming, and it's like the anger of him.
Yeah.
And she writes, oh, my God, this is every woman's nightmare. This is a terrifying image. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ben Shapiro. Our colleague here at Westwood One now. He works mm-hmm. for Westwood One.
Yep.
And congrats, because I saw in the trades he has gotten a new show here.
Right.
At Westwood One, too.
Yes.
Not just
yes. Going to be on Midnight to 5 Central, I think.
Ben writes to Maria Shriver.
Yeah.
Every woman's nightmare is being trapped in the back of a sinking car, gasping for air, I'd imagine. Did you ever ask your uncle about it?
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I just spotted that one. That was about three, four hours ago.
Yeah.
And so, the debate, I mean, just.
Wow.
Well, I mean, she's trying to make the case that if you listen to what he said, you can't argue with the point. You know, take a picture of a man being angry. This is terrifying to a woman. If we said, this sort of reminds me, well, the anger of him, whether it was Kavanaugh or whatever, the anger is wrong. The anger is wrong. It brings me back to 94 mm-hmm. and 95. And it's so clear, Matt, the angry white male. Mm-hmm. And I've said, there's nothing wrong with anger. And women know there's nothing wrong with anger from men if it's justified.
Well, it's the difference in defending yourself.
Yes.
What did we see with Strzok? His anger came up when he talked about Trump. His anger came out not when he was accused of doing something that he says he didn't do, but when someone brought up Trump, remember, mm-hmm. because I saw somebody make that comparison today on social media. Well, now conservatives are saying anger works. Anger is justified. It working is a political phrase. It was justified in a man defending himself. Strzok wasn't defending himself when he got angry. He was talking about Trump. and his hatred for Trump based on a comment that Trump made. There's a difference. We get angry as people. And to say that this was the other thing, too, is that if you followed social media today, it was as if only men get angry.
Well, that's true. Women never get angry, nope. Ever. Right? All the women listening right now, you never get angry.
I have been happily married for nearly 3 decades, and I will tell you, they never get angry.
Which is fact. Why you've been married for so long.
Fact. I'm also running for office, if anyone wants to vote for me. But the whole, and also, they're never wrong. So that entire equation, don't worry, she doesn't listen. She doesn't.
She's sleeping.
She doesn't. She might not be sleeping, but she's still not listening. But she said something to me, you know, that Nori guy is really good, the other day. But the whole idea here is to, you know, try and make that something. I forget who it was. A lawmaker, actually, that tweeted it. Imagine how angry he gets when he drinks. No, I mean, here's the equation. Would you be angry? We've talked about the people who are wrongfully accused of something. And what would go on if you were wrongly accused of something so heinous? What you would do, what your reaction would be. I don't know anyone who wouldn't be angry, especially it goes beyond the simple accusation. You are now in front of the entire world, not just the nation, but the entire world, and you are being labeled by lawmakers as a rapist. Tell me you're not going to be angry.
By the way, without evidence that you are a rapist.
Exactly.
And you have senators that are known throughout the world that are making the accusation that you did it.
Yeah. Tell me you're not going to be angry.
You betcha.
When you know you're innocent. There's no measure as to how angry I would be. There's no measure as to how far I would go in my fight against it to clear my name. And still, because it's politics, you never fully get to do that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley. I'm Gary McNamara talking about the Kavanaugh hearings from yesterday. Let's go to Diane in New York City. Diane, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Diane.
Oh, hi. Hi. Yeah, I love your show.
Thanks.
Okay. It's on now?
Yes, yes, you're on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Okay. Just a few thoughts real quick, fast. They never mention that his mother was the judge presiding when the Ford family home was foreclosed on. Okay, so, you know, that would, you know, not make her too fond of him.
It's not an issue. That's not an issue. That was a false issue. She did not rule to foreclose on any home.
Oh, okay, but, okay, forget that.
Okay.
I noticed when I was listening to it, I listened to the first part, unfortunately, I had to go to work, but the Democratic senators, each and every one, said that they believed in her, she was very credible, and they gave a whole big soliloquy about survivors, every single one, as if to implant this thought in the public's brain. And I thought that that was particularly heinous.
Well, and that's where I think that reporters should ask the question, you know, directly to those senators, why?
Yeah.
What evidence is there that you believe her? Well, because why would she come forward? That's not evidence.
That's not evidence.
You know, this is where the mainstream media, when talking to Democrat senators, have to have the same passion and interest in getting to the truth as they seem to have with Republican senators.
Well, I mean, it's as if they're saying that the Duke lacrosse thing, the claim there was true because, you know, Rolling Stone wrote about it. It's bizarre.
That was the Virginia.
Virginia.
Right.
So when you look at the bizarre behavior and creating fact out of a claim, where in the world do you go with that? How in the world do you sit and do an interview and say, I believe her? Well, you believe her why? My question is with Ford, because we said, well, there probably will be a book, right? Certainly TV interviews. Where does the TV interview go? Where do you go beyond what you saw yesterday? A TV interview, I know they film it for hours maybe, but they're only going to air a few minutes. What do you say that you haven't already said? Or does her story change again?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, talking about the, oh, I guess they're just referred to now as the hearings yesterday.
If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said, oh, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy. Are you a gang rapist?
No.
I cannot imagine what you and your family have gone through. Boy, y'all want power. God, I hope you never get it. I hope the American people can see through this sham. That you knew about it and you held it. You had no intention of protecting Dr. Ford. None. She's as much of a victim as you are. God, I hate to say it because these have been my friends. But let me tell you, when it comes to this, you're looking for a fair process. You came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend.
Lindsey Graham yesterday at the hearing. And, when that happened, you know, social media blew up. It seemed to unite most, Republicans. A lot of people surprised that it was Lindsey Graham that they came out so strong. I will say this, though. I mean, I wasn't surprised because this, I believe to somebody like Lindsey Graham, this goes even beyond politics.
Well, I think he was actually the perfect person to do it because people weren't expecting it from, I don't know that they were expecting it from anybody. Based on the opening from Senator Grassley.
Mm-hmm.
He was the perfect person, though, Graham was, to do it. I think he, first of all, there's no doubt that that was passion. That was pure passion. I didn't detect any contrived element in that entire basically that speech, that statement that he was making. Because what he did was sum up exactly what has been going on in terms of the passion on the ground by the people of America, but especially in the Republican Party right now. Because this is unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. If you open the door and say that we are going to change the rules now, where a claim now becomes fact, because someone said it out loud, because someone wrote a letter, because someone raised their right hand and was willing to testify that it's true. If you believe that it becomes fact, then you have changed the entire system and you undermine the integrity of the entire justice system. One thing that investigators will tell you is that witnesses to crimes, you would be shocked as to how unreliable they are. How tall was he? You can ask a number of witnesses who saw the same person give you very different answers. The point being is that just by saying so doesn't make it fact unless it's 2018, Donald Trump is president, and Brett Kavanaugh has been nominated for the highest court. This tells you how far they were willing to go. This tells you what they were willing to do. And this also tells you that after their loss in 2016, the Democrats still don't get it.
And it's not even about, as you know, you and I have stated before and was stated yesterday and by Lindsey Graham, as he said, that, you know, when he said you're as much as of a victim as Ford. But the other point that he made and other senators made about the Democrats is they really didn't care about her. They didn't care about actually having an investigation. That to me was something that was successfully defeated. You know, that argument from the Democrats of saying we're trying to investigate this. No, you're not. We tore it apart early on. So wait a minute. No, Feinstein could have called the FBI on July 31st. She could have told her, look, here are your choices. We can keep it anonymous. Here, we'll give it to the FBI. They can do the private interviews, and then we'll bring it to the committee. And if you wish to go forward after that, then your name will probably get known, but we can keep your name anonymous here for a while. She didn't do that. So they really weren't looking to do an investigation, and that's the whole thing. Democrats are trying to make the claim, and Feinstein, that she was above board. She was anything but above board. She was anything but really trying to get to the truth early on this. She saw this, and she believed it was an opportunity to get them to the point where they are right now.
Right.
And there was no caring. There was no concern about sexual assault. There was no concern about Dr. Ford. They simply said, okay, you're going to be the one that we're going to attempt to use and create a September surprise for the nomination process here. But they didn't care about her.
No.
And the other thing that I think Feinstein, you know, when she was taken to task also, you know, about who leaked it, we all know where the leak came. Leak came from Democrats. Mm-hmm. And even to the point where, you know, where she was trying to make the point that, well, maybe it was one of the, you know, the friends of Ford who did it.
Right.
And she went back to blame Ford
for
telling her friends, and they're the ones that probably leaked it, when I think we all know that in all likelihood it was leaked from either the congresswoman or staff or Feinstein's staff, because they're the only ones that knew.
Yep.
They're the only ones that knew. They leaked it.
Yeah, it really is. Well, it's telling of where the Democrats are as a party. Look, if you went out and you want to go based on Kavanaugh and how he would rule on whatever. I mean, it started with Roe v. Wade. Well, that wasn't resonating with the American people. It wasn't. Well, that didn't work. Then it went on to the documents they got last minute, and Kamala Harris trying to disrupt the process when they started the hearings day one. Well, that didn't work. Remember, they had talked about doing an all-out walkout, all the Democrats getting up and walking
out.
Mm-hmm.
That was one
that
of their
was
plans.
Going to be the plan. Well, that would have gone too far. Well, then you get to this. And again, it's not about Dr. Ford's claim. It's about how the claim was used and given full integrity from the beginning. We said it. Here's the play. Hashtag, I believe her. Based on, I don't know, nothing. Based on zero. Because there is zero except her claim. I can say, well, I believe something may have happened to her, but it doesn't prove that Brett Kavanaugh did it.
Well, yeah, I guess you anybody can make that assumption that something happened to her, but we just don't know when, where, and whom.
Well, her story has changed a number of times.
Right.
So the fact of the matter is this. There's, at this point, that really wasn't what this was all about. Today was about the circus, about the show. It was about trying to make Kavanaugh look like the perpetrator. And when they couldn't do that, they'll just all out call him guilty.
And, you know, when we've gotten a lot of response on this, that I believe her, you know, that mm-hmm. has come out. And if you don't believe her, then you're, you know, part of the, what do they call it here? The, I can't think of the word that they use. You're an evil person if you don't believe her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's got nothing to do with believing her or believing him. It's not about, as we've said many times, it's not about the individuals. It's about any case where you come
right.
to it and you say,
right.
what's the evidence?
Right.
And that's why reporters should have been from the very beginning asking specific questions and saying, why do you believe her?
Hmm.
Well, why would she come forward? That's not an answer. That's not evidence. Because I can, you know, because as a reporter, I would say I can bring up other instances. I want to know what evidence she is presenting to you that makes you sure 100% that her claim is 100% true, that it was Brett Kavanaugh. You're making the claim you believe her, which means you believe Brett Kavanaugh tried to rape her. What evidence is there that exists? Well, I think she's a sympathetic figure. That's not evidence.
Nope.
That's feelings. And one of the things I noticed today, you know, that the media is talking about, how do you feel about it? And you saw it on social media. I feel this about him. I feel this about her. And I know this is rhetoric, but what do feelings have to do with it? Feelings have nothing to do with it. Doesn't matter what you feel. Because you feel sympathy towards her, or even if you feel sympathy towards him, still has nothing to do with the actual evidence that exists.
I can have sympathy for both and still believe right. that there's been nothing that shows that Brett Kavanaugh did this.
Right. She has not presented the evidence. It's that simple. Well, I'm not insulting her. I'm not doing anything to her. I'm simply stating a matter of fact. The evidence doesn't exist.
And the Democrats will tell you, no, the evidence is her statement.
Right. No, it's not.
She is to be believed because she said it. I don't know if she's lying or if she's made a mistake. It's mistaken identity. I don't know what happened or didn't happen. I have no idea. I can tell you she did not make her case.
I'm married and my wife says that somebody assaulted me, in all likelihood, I'm going to believe her because I know her.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of us don't know her. We can only go by the evidence that exists. Your calls and comments coming up next. If you want to get in, lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
The 10th annual Guilty by Association Truck Show at Four State Trucks in Joplin, Missouri is this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Brian Martin from Four State Trucks tells us more.
Well, this is our 10th GBAT, so a decade of truck shows right here at Four State in Joplin. I can tell you, as of today, we've got 735 pre-registered trucks that all intend to come out this weekend, and that's unprecedented. It's a show for everybody, whether you got a 1986 Freightliner or a 2017 Peterbilt, anything in between. This year, we're literally a three-night, two-day show. We're starting Thursday night with the early arrival dinner, and then we're going right into a professional bull riding event. Full two-hour pyrotechnics bull ride event on Thursday night, and then we've got stuff all day Friday and Friday night,
yeah.
All day Saturday and Saturday night, culminating in downtown Joplin. So there's action for the whole family.
For more details on the GBAT show, go to ChromeShopMafia.com. This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90 Red Eye. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara. And it's we were just talking about the fact that, the Democrats were chastised and taken to task by the Republicans at the hearing for leaking it, claiming that they cared about her privacy and everything else, and they didn't care about her. It was even brought up on CNN, Jake Tapper and their legal, what do we call them?
Legal analyst.
I was going to call him Hack, because Jeffrey Toobin
Chief
is a hack.
Chief legal analyst.
Sorry, but he is. But
is his title there.
But listen to this back and forth, okay? Here we go. All right.
And Jeffrey, let me ask you a question, because Republicans do have a point when they say somebody, sometimes they unfairly say it was Senator Feinstein, but somebody leaked this to The Intercept and then to other people in the media to force this coming out, that it wasn't Republicans who outed her, it was somebody, likely a Democrat. And let's be honest, the motive was probably to stop Kavanaugh, not to have justice prevail.
Probably true. So what?
There you go.
Probably true. So what? So it proves that the Democrats didn't care about her privacy.
Well, the Democrats, the media, they really never cared. I mean, it's important to understand, because that's the sham that they're trying to put up, that we were trying to protect her. No, they weren't.
No.
Never were.
No, they weren't. They don't care about her. It's how they can use her.
They did not care that, as we have said all along, they did not care the fact that she was, that she believes that she was sexually assaulted by Justice Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
It was simply, how can we use her? And the other interesting thing, and this hasn't been answered, at least maybe I missed it in the 8 hours because I wasn't able to watch the whole thing, as most people weren't able to watch every single second of it. But the fact is, where she said, well, she claimed that she was afraid to fly because she wanted them to come out, to visit, to see her, and then realize it was unreasonable. What are you talking about? The Republicans offered that to you. Did your attorneys not tell you that? Are your attorneys working against you too? Or was she lying twice?
Right. It's one or the other. Because that offer was made.
And it was made early on.
Yes.
And, and she claims that the reason that she lied was she didn't want to fly out there. She'd rather them come out to her. And because she didn't want the public spectacle. She wanted to do it, she's claiming, without the cameras.
Right.
And so did her lawyers and the Democrats collude? So we've got to use that word.
Mm-hmm.
Collude together?
Right.
To work against her privacy? In order to create the circus?
Well, that's all part of, there's no doubt, because that's all part of how it was always going to be. It can't be behind closed doors. Why? Well, because you're just going to hear from the chairman and Kamala Harris and Lindsey Graham. That you're not going to hear from her. No. This was as close to a perp walk for Kavanaugh as they were going to get. That's what they needed. That's what they wanted. You know, I said, okay, here will the still shots won't be her holding her hand up when she's sworn in. It will not be her looking nervous. It will be all about Kavanaugh. And, of course, it was.
Well, again, Jeffrey Toobin makes the point we've always made all along, which is that the media and the Democrats never cared about the fact that she was that she was sexually attacked or whatever, or an attempted rape, whatever. That they didn't care about her claim.
No,
they just cared how they could use it.
Yes,
it shows you the fraud that they were attempting to promote all along.
Not on Ambien, there's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So what happened was, after the hearing, moderates Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, as well as Senators Joe Manchin and Jeff Flake huddled to discuss the nomination.
Well, that's interesting.
They talked for about 30 minutes before GOP conference meeting on Thursday. That, by the way, Mitchell was at and said there was no positive cooperation. In fact, it was negative cooperation. Is the quote that we got. Mm-hmm. They talked for about 30 minutes before the GOP conference meeting Thursday, ahead of Friday's planned Judiciary Committee vote on whether to recommend Kavanaugh's confirmation to the full Senate. And what did I see? We could expect a full vote as early as Saturday?
It could happen. Because if that's the case, then you would have, and the president could then swear him in, and he could be seated for day one at SCOTUS. So if you look at that equation, you said something earlier this week, I forget which night it was, about the political give and take, I guess, back and forth here on those in the middle. But if you look at that meeting where you had Murkowski and Collins and Flake and Manchin, okay, you said something the other night. Well, does Manchin, along with Heitkamp and Donnelly, as Democrats in red states, do they have more pressure if they know that Collins is a no vote, right? Collins in her state can get away with a no vote. Flake doesn't matter what he votes, because he's got at the moment has no political future. You look at Murkowski, and that's really, again, up in the air. So were they doing a head count? Because the pressure is on Manchin. Now, there was one reporter that was reporting, a source close to Manchin was saying that, without any definitive evidence being presented before the vote, that Manchin is likely a yes. But then that same reporter later Thursday evening said his official spokesperson said he is 100% undecided at this moment. But that's not a no. So you look at the head count. We had Corker coming out as a yes. I don't know.
I always thought he was a yes to begin with.
I always felt he was a yes anyway. The whole undecided with Corker was just kind of Corker being Corker. I don't know about Flake. I believe Flake is probably a yes. I think.
Well, Flake, just from what he said yesterday, in fact, after that meeting, he said she was a good witness, so was he, but you need some evidence, some corroborating evidence,
yes.
Like impeachment.
Exactly. Yes.
He's on the line. The line he's talking about is there is no evidence.
Right.
There's only the allegation. Besides the allegation, there is zero evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Zero.
Right.
There's nothing.
Right. And so, and that was based, that's what I was basing my, if I'm doing a soft head count in my head, you know, even though Flake is not up for reelection, he's, you know, has not announced that he could run for office in the future. But the point being is that he's safe to vote no. But I don't know that he's going to. I think he's probably a yes, based on that comment of, you know, where he was questioned about that. Susan Collins can vote no. She's safe in voting no. And the statement by her camp would likely be, sorry, I could not get this, you know, with the whole shadow of a doubt thing. I could not, in good conscience, vote for him or whatever it might be. So you look at the headcount where it is. I haven't heard anything on Heitkamp or Donnelly.
What about Manchin?
I think Manchin is a yes. Because where do you have your safest, where would he have his cover to come out if he really was a no? And he could be undecided at this moment, but honestly, right now in his state especially, the Republicans are livid about how this process went and what the Democrats did. That is the proverbial political suicide if you vote no. I'm not saying Manchin is going to win the election, but
With Manchin up on an average, Real Clear Politics, by 9 points, you ask the question, does he want to keep that 9 points?
That's the whole point.
This would be the political question. Is the roughly 9 point, and that's the average, the latest... the latest polling, Emerson has him up by 12.
Right.
But, you know, since June, the four polls that have been taken have him up by an average of 9.3, which he has held pretty consistently throughout.
Right.
So do you say to yourself, I've got a buffer? Or do you say, if I say yes, I'm a shoo-in to be elected?
I would say if he had a 53-point lead... in a poll, that's a buffer on this issue. 12 is not necessarily a buffer on this issue. I think it changes drastically with a Trump campaigning in his state. If he votes no, he's going to campaign in the state anyway. But if Trump campaigns in the state, if you vote no and Trump campaigns in the state, don't count on that 12 being there in 6 weeks.
And the other point is, too, that's a registered voter, the plus 12. The latest on a likely voter poll, which is more accurate. If you look at past elections, the likely voters are more accurate. The questions that they ask, are you an active voter? Do you actually go out and vote? Registered voters in a midterm might be less than 50%.
Right.
But likely voters was 8. So do they, in their internal polls, when it comes to likely voters, looking at it, saying we only have a 6-8, you know, hypothetically, 6-8. Point lead in West Virginia. So
with 6 weeks to go.
With 6 weeks to go. And the fact is you've got to make this decision now. 6 weeks is a long time. And you know that if you vote against this, Trump will be in West Virginia pounding this.
Right. Well, because I can see the statement from the Manchin camp being, listen, and I did not see any definitive evidence. Well, we certainly feel for Dr. Ford. And, you know, basically a statement yesterday, you know, that she gave a good testimony. I did not feel that it proved that Kavanaugh was guilty of this. And you can, in his state especially, that's not going to be a problem. And Schumer wants him in office because Schumer needs Manchin and Heitkamp and Donnelly on other things where they don't side necessarily with Trump or the Republicans. They need those votes to help the Democrats. They're going to need those seats to help the Democrats on other issues. So Schumer wants, you know, he wants Manchin to win. It's funny, you know, after the whole John McCain thing and the passing of John McCain and what they were saying, that we need to get back to that. When Manchin supports Republicans, they never talk about how he reaches across the aisle, how he rises above politics and everything else, because for them, that really is a one-way street. Just a side note there. But I think that you look at the headcount now, and I think there's a case made for 51.
Let us head to you, and by the way, 51 still gets you the buffer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could still use the vice president if it's 50.
Yes, right.
So you do have a buffer.
Right. I think without the Veep, I think you still get to 51. But even to that point, you get to 50, and the vice president being the tiebreaker.
Let us head to you. We go to Carla in West Cape May, New Jersey. Carla, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Carla.
Hi. My question is a little long, but I'll start. Why did she feel she wanted a polygraph test? If that were me to do my civic duty, I would go, feel I'm telling the truth. I wouldn't say, oh, let me get a poly test to prove, unless our Democratic operative lawyer was involved.
Well,
and when she was let me finish. And when she was pressed on linking that polygraph test to her Democratic operative lawyer, she was asked who paid for it. Do you know? And she said, not yet. And
well, that was the point I was going to make.
Right,
is that
right.
She
thanks,
is that she said she didn't know who paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know. By the way, don't ask us the questions of why she thinks the way that she thinks, because we can't tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. We can tell you what she has said, but we can't. If it's a question in general as to the suspicion of the credibility of her argument, then that's okay.
Or if it's a question where you're trying to surmise your theory here, you're putting together your own theory, that's one thing. But I don't know that any one theory here applies, because there are so many questions. You know? I mean, is it the general theory that it's politically driven? That's a given.
Well, I knew we would. I knew we're going to get. I'm looking at the calls. Everybody's got their little point of a minutia of it,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said earlier, that's fine. But as we started out the show saying, they all really don't matter, because when it comes down to it, she still doesn't have the basics of what you need,
mm-hmm.
which is either forensic evidence or witnesses that back you. She has nothing. Now, the minutia of it does bring into her credibility, but that's after you look at it and say, no forensics, no witnesses.
Well,
zero evidence to begin with.
Every investigation is a fact-finding mission. And there are very few facts in this case. Very few facts in this case. Investigators have to, in any situation, investigators, anybody looking into an event, has to do their due diligence to find those facts. But when you're left with very few facts, the Kavanaugh drank beer in high school. Okay? We know that fact because he admitted it. He went to parties. We know that because he admitted it. Very few facts. That's what this is. This is where the Democrats have failed drastically the process, where they just shredded the process, ignored the process, circumvented the process by trying to equate claim with fact.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us go to Mike in Brighton, Colorado. Mike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Very good.
I watched every second of the hearings today, something I've never done since the Kennedy assassination. And I'd like you to ask me, as a honorable veteran, honorably discharged veteran, any question you would like to ask me about what happened today.
You tell us what you tell us.
Actually, you're here to present your view.
Right.
Yeah. What would you?
Okay. Welcome to the court, Judge Kavanaugh. It was amazing to me that how sympathetic I felt about the doctor and how milquetoast I thought Attorney Mitchell was. But after I listened to Judge Kavanaugh, I was convinced that he will be our next Supreme Court judge, who is more important than any other office in the country.
Well, I think those are probably fair observations and likely parallel the observations of many people. I mean, I don't know that what we expected from the prosecutor. I don't know if I had any expectations of her nature or demeanor. But I think if you look at it, certainly it is, when someone is claiming what they're claiming with Dr. Ford's case during her testimony, nothing wrong with feeling sympathy for somebody, but at the end of it, you have to ask the question, did that show definitively that, did she make the case that Kavanaugh was guilty of doing this? And the answer for me was no, she did not. So you can feel sympathy for someone and still believe that they did not make their case, and that's exactly how I
feel. We learned nothing new from her son.
Nothing. Nothing. I suspect, as we all can see it now, as it is, the hearing is behind us, we can look at it and say, well, this clearly was orchestrated, as we all knew it was, to be something that it isn't. To take a claim again and to turn it to fact, to equate claim and fact. They are not synonymous.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning as we talk about the hearing yesterday. By the way, a vote scheduled from the Judiciary Committee this morning sometime, and a possible vote of the full Senate on Saturday to confirm Judge Kavanaugh. I want to play this audio cut here, and this comes from the question and comments from Senator Tillis of North Carolina. And this comes, the whole question about, because it came up yesterday about the FBI, why can't the FBI investigate? And they bring up the fact that the Democrats didn't want to participate in actually fact-finding missions through this, through the whole investigative process of the Senate Judiciary Committee to begin with. And we all know that Senator Feinstein could have gone to the FBI early on, could have gone in August to do it, but they never really, the interest was never really to do an investigation to find out the truth early. It was only one thing, and everybody knows that it was to do what? To hold up the nomination and the vote on the nomination and the vote to confirm Kavanaugh until after the election. But here's that part of this, the comments from Senator Tillis yesterday.
Questions came up when it was all fully known. Lawyered up, as a matter of fact. I also want to go back to the comments this morning. I think I heard, and we can go back to the record if someone disagrees with me. I think I heard Dr. Ford say that she wasn't aware of the fact that we said we'd come to California, we'd make it confidential, we'll completely depose and ask any questions you want to. I think I heard her say she wasn't aware of that. I don't know where that came with counsel or not, or whether counsel just neglected to tell her counsel, but the fact of the matter is that offer was out there. We were moving heaven and earth and even moving the schedule to get to the truth. We're doing an investigation. We're doing our level best. I hope that the American people who are watching this will go out to the Senate Judiciary website and take a look at this chronology. Take a look at the lack of investigation on the part of the people who want the investigation. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Every opportunity you have to go and question a witness, every opportunity that we've had to find more truth, to find more facts, we've done it. It's documented. We've got sworn statements. We're doing our job. We're doing the committee work. Judge Kavanaugh, I also have to say, I believe that you're a part of, you're the first major target of a new strategy that's developed here. And I think you're right. I think it's just basically attack, attack, attack. It's not advising consent. It's search and destroy. And maybe one of the best evidence of this is one of the websites, one of the groups that are out there attacking you and trying to create fodder and all of these red herrings has already acquired a URL for the next judge that they're going to attack.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Expected, though. I mean, that's,
sure.
To me, that's not shocking. That would happen whether they were involved in, you know, whether they were being more amenable anyway. Mm. The outside groups would still be doing that, so. Yeah, we know that, and both sides would do that, so that's no surprise at all. So
no, but it you know the fact that you point out here, and I think it was just to point out that the side that says they want the investigation, they're not doing it.
Well, the thing is, the last couple of times that they've talked to Kavanaugh, I believe the last two or three times. I don't know. I just they may not have before, but I just I don't have that in front of me what they did when they first interviewed him, but I believe it's the last two or three times where the Senate Judiciary Committee has asked Kavanaugh about the other allegations against him, that the Senate Democrats are part of the conversation, but they don't ask any questions. They right. don't get involved in the investigation at all. And nothing. Even though they were on the line, you know, even though they were on the line, the phone lines, they didn't get involved in any of the questioning, any of the investigation whatsoever.
No, because you, first of all, they know there's nothing here. So anything that they're going to do, any of their work is going to be about creating the show. It's not about doing the real work, as it was pointed out in that audio cut you just played. Of the committee. It's about doing the work of the party. For them, it was about creating the show, the circus. And that's exactly what they did.
Let us head to you. We go to Diane in Bethesda, Maryland. Diane, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
I've learned a lot from you guys, I'll tell you. I used to be the touchy-feely type, but after listening to you guys for a while, I really zero in on what you're talking about, the facts. So I'm looking at something different tonight. I think we were all looking for evidence against Kavanaugh or some kind of evidence for her story. I think her story, if you look at everything she said, is a conflicted story. It's a conflicted story in an abnormal realm. And what every single thing, the flying, I don't fly. When you're afraid of flying, you don't fly. Okay? Evidence number one. It's a conflicted story. Oh, she said, I fly. Oh, because it might be on a vacation. For a vacation. Mm. There's something wrong, okay? It's like a bell goes off. Let's look at the horrible story, the night that she, the afternoon or not evening that she experienced. When she's coming out after she goes to the hiding in the bathroom. Nobody has ever said this. If you are 15 and you have a girlfriend and you're the only two girls there and there's four guys or maybe more, she ran out of the house and left her friend there?
Yeah, that was brought, social media was all over that yesterday.
Yeah,
so you know.
I never heard that. But it's a lot of things. She says hi to the guy at the Safeway a couple weeks later, separates from her mother, goes, says hi. She goes to parties where Kavanaugh's there, but she goes to more parties. There might have been 10 parties. So when you add up all of the different things, it's a confusion, like you said, the confused person, not to attack her. I believe, and there's a guy that's supposed to have looked like Brett Kavanaugh that she dated for a few months. Maybe that happened with him. Maybe she experienced another party, and it was so traumatic that she just zeroed out. I don't know, but none of this makes sense if you look at it from a factual point of view. And thank you, Lindsey Graham, for giving us a cathartic moment that was for 2 years we've suffered from this crap, as he has said. I wish I could have the recording.
Yeah. Well, it's
every
out there.
Well,
yeah, you can find
it.
It's out
Lindsey.
There. Yeah, it's all over the internet. Well, look, you've got to be careful because I saw that debate yesterday on the whole airplane. Well, if you're afraid to fly, you don't fly. And then the response was, well, no, you may be afraid to fly, but you push yourself to fly for the important things out there. And so people say, okay, that defeats your argument.
Well,
so
because you'll never find a fact in going down that road.
Right. So that's not the point to argue. The point to argue was what she said when Mitchell, the prosecutor, asked her specifically about it. And what she said was, well, she used that, I'm paraphrasing here, but she used that as an excuse because she just wished for them to come to her.
Right.
And her not to have to come to Washington, D.C. They wanted, and so she admitted that the fear of flying wasn't keeping her. It was her wanting to do the interview in private and had the Senate Judiciary Committee come to her to ask her the questions. Now, the interesting point is, and this was brought up, Tillers brought it up, in fact, just brought it up. That was something that they had, that was something that confused him because the Senate Judiciary Committee had offered to go out there to see her to do it. And so the question comes up, didn't her lawyers tell her? Were her lawyers in cahoots with the Democrats in the Senate Judiciary Committee and said, let's keep some things from her? I mean, was it a point or was she lying about both?
Well,
it's got to be one or the other.
Right. And that's it has to be that either she's lying or her attorneys never told her. It's hard to believe that the attorneys would keep it from her. But then again, look at this entire charade and what has gone on for the last couple of weeks. So anything is possible, but it is one of those two.
Let's go to Nate in Chicago. Nate, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. I appreciate you taking my call. I'm just calling the vent. I listened to the majority of both sides of the testimony. I thought there were gaps in Ford's testimony, but what really compelled me to call was watching the judge's testimony. I mean, he made a couple points that I want to make a note on. The first one being the ramifications of what is transpiring in front of our nation right now. And whether he's confirmed or not, there are going to be ramifications. The second point I wanted to touch on is, just if you're a father, a son, or a brother, like what do women expect these accusations, like how does a male respond to these type of these accusations if he is innocent?
Are you saying his anger should, of course he should be angry because he's being falsely accused, and if you're falsely accused, then it's justified, I guess. Is that your point?
Yeah, that's my point.
Okay.
You know, I talked to my fiance, you know, all throughout the afternoon and the evening while the testimonies were going on. I mean, there were moments when I was trying to understand something from her viewpoint, and she basically responded, "Well, you're not a female. You can't understand it, or you haven't been in those situations," which I totally understand. But, I mean, I just was brought up with the presumption that you're innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, but that's not an that's not an argument. Men sit on rape cases all the time and convict.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an argument. That's a bogus argument that comes from the left.
There's
that,
a long line of that male prosecutors
right.
who have convicted rapists.
Right, that men can't understand. Men can understand it.
We
might not experience it if we are accosted in the same way, but no two crimes are the same. But men can understand it. Men can understand the violation of a woman.
Sure.
And men can
Don't misunderstand what I'm trying to say. She's a very objective woman. What she's just trying to was expound upon me was like it's a different like because I would ask her like, well, why was she sitting on this for so long? You know, why not? You know, this guy has been through six FBI background checks. I was in the military. I know what a background check entails.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they talk to everyone that you were ever associated with from fourth grade and until the time you enter into the service. You know what I'm saying? So my whole point was, why was this never brought up when he was a circuit judge or appeals court judge?
Okay.
Well, and again,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And again, I mean, you know, to your fiance's point, or I guess in response to her point, it would, you know, you look at the situation and you ask, how do you go forward with essentially condemning someone because he wasn't going to be convicted, but condemning someone and labeling them guilty without substantial evidence beyond the claim? Because there has been there is nothing in this case beyond Dr. Ford's claim. I don't know what happened to Dr. Ford or not.
There were deep gaps, and I wish you guys would expound upon this more, but there were deep gaps in this woman's testimony. I'm not saying she wasn't sexually assaulted. Actually, I walked away from the testimony believing that she was, but there was not enough evidence for me to believe that the judge, Kavanaugh,
look, there's a possibility, right. But as I've right. said, thanks, I disagree with anybody who says, I believe she was sexually assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know.
I leave the possibility open that something may have happened to her. I have no idea what didn't happen.
I can only go by the evidence. I don't know her. As I said before, if I was her husband and she came to me and told me she was sexually assaulted, then I would believe her because I know her. Mm-hmm. I don't know her. All I can go in is by the evidence. I can be sympathetic, as I said earlier to start the show. I can be sympathetic, but we have evolved the word sympathy into credible.
Yes.
That sympathy equates credibility, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
I can feel sorry for whatever, you know, because you can see how emotional she is, and I can feel sympathy for her. That does not evolve into credibility, as many people say. Well, why would she be up here doing it? I don't know. But the evidence doesn't show it.
Right.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open for the first time, I think, all show. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome to the show. Let us quickly head back to you. We go to Adam in Colorado Springs. Adam, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Well, I was calling because, honestly, I believe everybody's really looking at this the wrong way. You know, they're looking at it as guilt or innocence. About Kavanaugh, and honestly, it has nothing to do with Kavanaugh. What it has to do with is the fact that the Democrats' agenda really is not upheld by the people. The people don't support it, so they literally rely on judges to uphold their agenda. That's why anything that Trump tried to initially push through obviously got stuck with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, very liberal, and they shut him down. With this particular issue, all they were trying to do, and what people don't, I don't think, quite understand, is that they were essentially trying to delay this hearing, and delay it, till Thursday, because if they didn't take a vote and get him confirmed by Thursday, then he's not going to be able to be sat by
October 1st.
Basically October
right.
1st.
Yes, we've talked about this many, many times, but the goal mm-hmm. is not to have, the goal was never about October 1st, because the goal no. was to make it so it went after the election. It was never about right. October 1st.
No. Because there could be exceptions made. You look at the cycle of what would happen if the vote doesn't happen, right? The confirmation doesn't happen for Kavanaugh. Well, you're not going to get another shot at a nominee for another 60 to 90 days in terms of a confirmation vote. The process takes that long. So the president would have to first nominate, and then it would have to go through the process. And then on the other side, a Manchin, a Heitkamp, a Donnelly may feel empowered or safe, if you will, to vote no. For Video Road Log, here's your forecast.
All right, we're starting to see that fall time pattern emerge. And what we get here are these big pools of colder air out of Canada moving into the northern tier and Midwest states. Chicago, for instance, today will be around 70 degrees. Tomorrow's high, 62 in the Windy City. A lingering front in the southeast may produce heavy rain and strong to severe thunderstorms today. Gusty winds and continued dry conditions are keeping fire weather threats critical in the Great Basin and Rockies region. Areas today prone to flash flood watches and warnings would include southern Texas, especially the western Gulf counties, and eastern Tennessee and northern Alabama. Daytime highs today in L.A., 89, tomorrow 83. For New York City, we'll see 69 degrees today with some rain showers. Miami, 88 in thunderstorms. Dallas, 85 under sunny skies. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90 Red Eye, and of course talking about the hearings from yesterday. So we've had some long discussions. Let's get to some of your comments. Let's go to Jim in Philadelphia. Jim, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call.
Let me
start by asking a question. Is it not true that when Congress goes back in session in January, do they not all take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States as part of that oath?
I'm quite serious. I know you're serious, but if you expect the Democrats to be defending the Constitution, then I think that's a high expectation.
Well, that's my point. Yeah. If in fact they do, and I'm an attorney and I've taken that oath on a couple of occasions, but let me say this. If you listened at all today, and I did, well, a couple of breaks to the men's room and back, there's no question that they threw due process, the Sixth Amendment, under the bus. Yeah. In order to,
all right. Let's be careful here. They threw the spirit of the Sixth Amendment under the bus.
There was a presumption with every Democrat on that committee that he was guilty until proven innocent.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm saying the spirit, because the actual, if you're talking technically, if you're a lawyer, you understand that the Sixth Amendment is about the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury.
Tell me they were impartial?
No.
They made up their minds before
it was It wasn't a jury.
It wasn't a jury trial.
It wasn't a
criminal trial.
In many ways, it was. It was a trial about this man's integrity and his right to sit on the court.
That's not the point, and you know it. If you're a lawyer, stop it, because you know that's not the point.
Please.
If you're a lawyer, you know that's not the point. I agree with you on the spirit of it, but the Sixth Amendment doesn't apply here. And by the way, we've been but the spirit of due process and what they have done, I absolutely agree with you. It's reprehensible what they did. There still
is. Talking about a speedy trial, and this was a trial, in my opinion. Then why did every Republican come out and say, "No, we're not going to prolong this with some bogus FBI investigation"?
Why are you doing this?
I'm doing this.
You know, no, you understand the point.
Because a man is sitting there with the highest integrity in the country.
I understand that. I don't disagree with you on that. But this is not a criminal trial. And you keep trying to say, because in your opinion it's a criminal trial, that it's a criminal trial.
Well, you're going to tell me that Senator Feinstein.
Jim.
Who had to.
Jim.
Let me finish.
No, I'm not going to let you finish because I want you to answer this question. Was this officially a criminal trial?
Officially, no.
Then it's not
a
Sixth Amendment. Then it's not a Sixth Amendment. It may be immoral and unethical, but his constitutional rights were not violated. That's my point.
The man was never given a right to properly defend an allegation because Senator Feinstein committed an act which he should be censured for.
That's not my point. I agree with you completely.
By holding on to this letter.
I agree with you.
Had no right to anonymity.
I agree with you on that.
Okay, she had no right to anonymity.
Okay,
because,
good.
Because an investigation begins with the FBI investigating the individual.
No, it's not an investigation that the FBI does. It is a background check.
Well,
the FBI,
what you wish, but they start with the complainant. That's my point. They start with the complainant first.
Right. Right.
And then they go from there, and she didn't want that done. Now, I listened to the woman. She was passionate. But I have to tell you, I agree totally with what you've said about the situation with the airlines. You only have, and flying, you only have to talk to John Madden to find out the true fear of flying. But beyond that, you know, really,
no, man, you're right.
You know, she's sitting on the beach to get direction on what to do. She has two doctorates and a master's. And the only thing I could come up to entitle this was, Gidget Goes to Washington. I just found there was no credibility here.
Jim, I agree with everything. I do believe that she should be censured for what she's doing. My only point was, we have to be, when you deal with the left, you have to be totally intellectually honest. We don't have to exaggerate anything. That's why I was stating, and we've been stating all along, this entire last 2 weeks, that yes, it's not a criminal trial. It's not a civil trial, but it is a political trial. But a political trial legally is not the same as those others that are official trials.
Well,
but
I would invite you to go back and listen to Senator Graham, who was outstanding, and listen
to
his.
We did. Senator,
I watched
to
his voice, and I want to tell you what he was
Jim,
saying.
Jim, I'm going to stop you because, again, you're getting off topic. You made the case that it was a Sixth Amendment issue. That's my only point. I agree with you on everything else. I agree with everything that the senator from South Carolina said. I agree with your analysis of her. My only point and objection was, if you say it's a Sixth Amendment issue, that's where the left will call you on it and then attempt to destroy your credibility for everything else. You don't need to say something that isn't true, that it's a Sixth Amendment issue, to defend the case that the spirit of the Sixth Amendment is being violated here, even if the actual Sixth Amendment is not. That's my only point.
I will never lose any sleep over the Democrats trying to destroy my credibility versus what I've heard from today and what I've heard from a number of people who support that position, because they have totally distorted all of this.
I agree.
Well pointed out. You have documented it beautifully.
I agree completely.
I don't lose any sleep over what the left may think of me.
Well, no, that's not the point. The point is that that's not the point. The point
and I don't
is
think they could destroy me. Well, I think there are many Americans who are as outraged as I am.
Okay, I'm not saying they're going to destroy you. I'm simply saying in the arena of debate, which we do every day, and you've listened to our show, in our arena of debate, we have to be factually correct, because the left will attempt to dominate the conversation and find any mistake that you make. Look, the presumption of innocence, as we have said, it is part of our American culture, and it comes from the Sixth Amendment, the presumption, and it should be the case here. Our only point was, officially, it was not a Sixth Amendment issue. That was my only point.
Maybe,
I was trying to correct
you. It wasn't specifically spoken, but let me say this. The man was, they were looking to find the man guilty of a sexual attack, and if that isn't criminal, I don't know what is. Okay?
Okay.
They were trying to prove that the man committed a criminal act, and that makes it part of the Sixth Amendment discussion.
Actually, I'll actually take you to task on that. They actually weren't trying to convict him. They were convicting him.
Not in the eyes, I think, of most Americans who really
No. Their whole point is he did it. That's my point. My point is they're not trying to convict him. They have convicted him.
This is the ironic thing about them taking an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and then they take the very principles that the Constitution is founded on, and they throw them under the bus when it suits them.
Oh, sure.
Well, I will say this. I do believe that these people, if they're willing to go this far, would violate anybody's Sixth Amendment rights.
Absolutely.
I do agree I will agree with you on that. This shows that they don't, because if you don't believe in the spirit of the Sixth Amendment, if you don't believe in the spirit of it,
which goes further than the amendment itself.
Right. And you would deny the spirit of it in this case, and you would convict somebody without any evidence whatsoever, even if it isn't a criminal trial, I believe you would do it in a criminal trial. So I think we can come to an agreement on that.
I think we can.
Okay, cool. All right, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Jim. You so much. All right, appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going home. I'm tired.
Well, and this was my point earlier, because what is next? If you look at, because this, while it wasn't a criminal trial, what about accusing somebody of doing something that is within the statute of limitations in this same manner? Imagine that Dr. Ford had come forward and said that this wasn't when they were teenagers, but instead the story was this happened earlier this year. Because then, of course, it would warrant an investigation, but politically, wouldn't it be the same approach by the Democrats? He's guilty because we say he is. You don't have to look very far.
That's a good point.
Michael Brown was innocent.
Would it have been any different?
Michael Brown was innocent. And if you were to question Michael Brown and his innocence and say that Darren Wilson was innocent instead, the officer, then you were the bad guy, to the point, and don't believe that wasn't political. That was political. That entire situation in Ferguson rose to help essentially usher in what we're seeing right now. And that is, the facts don't matter. It doesn't matter that the family commissioned autopsy showed that the hands up, don't shoot narrative was a lie. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that Obama's Justice Department, led by then Eric Holder, found that it was a lie and that people were threatened in that community if they told the truth. That doesn't matter. And that's how you get to where we are today in this political process.
And in that case with Ferguson, that's why we said that the president, that was Obama, and also Eric Holder, that they do not believe in due process under the law.
Right.
Because that was a criminal case, and they were taking sides before the evidence was in and finding a cop guilty, which means they don't believe in due process under the law,
right?
Which is the Sixth Amendment.
Yep. And that's how you get to where we are today. So to believe that it can't happen in a legal setting, you know, as we said earlier, this is because that is really the next step for any politician. It's that is, in fact, it has happened before, but it is going to happen to the nth degree from this point on. This is going to be the tactic of the left. This will be, and man, they're wishing, I'm sure, for that kind of scenario where they can politically and legally go after someone who was otherwise innocent.
That's the next step, isn't it?
It is.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to David in Sterling Heights, Michigan. David, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm out here delivering the paper. Hey. I wish that Kavanaugh, when he with his opening statement, would have closed like this. You and all of you Democrats that are on this committee, the senators, and my accuser want an FBI investigation. Well, let's say hypothetically we have an FBI investigation. And it comes back that the allegation is false. How are each of you senators going to vote? Are you going to vote yes to get me through this committee and yes on the floor of the Senate? Or are you going to vote no? I want to hear from each one of you how you're going to vote now.
No, I disagree. I think Kavanaugh gave the right answer. I don't think he should have had it in his opening statement. He doesn't set how...
It closed off.
No, he doesn't set
because
how...
They're going to vote no matter what.
No, but my point is Kavanaugh shouldn't have never brought it... He didn't bring it up, but he should have never brought it up if you believe he should have. He didn't, but it was right for him not to bring it up, and I think he answered it the right way, which was, that's not up to me.
Well, there it is, David. You just answered it. They're going to vote no no matter what, so really that would be an act in futility. That's not going to actually...
Well, but it would have brought up the sham that it really is, though.
Well, but... I think everybody sees it. I think that was anybody who was willing to pay attention to this scenario, and I mean to the details, and follow these hearings and the storyline, knows that it was a sham already.
Right.
I think that was a given.
But just by calling it, I tell you, they win just because you called it an FBI investigation.
Mm-hmm. Well,
hypothetically.
Well,
but it's not an investigation. It's a background check. There is no investigation for a crime.
Yeah.
And the reason you don't do it is because it would go on for months upon months upon months. We saw how long that the FBI investigation of Trump and collusion went on for the longest time.
It's still going.
At the end of the 10 months of that investigation, they still had nothing that Lisa Page, texted out. But they've already interviewed all the parties.
Right. There really is nothing to look into.
All the parties are already on the record.
Right.
You don't need an FBI background check because all the parties and all the witnesses she claims were there have all been interviewed, and that's all the FBI would do. So you cut out the middleman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're not going to convince any liberals if he would have said that.
No.
Oh, Kavanaugh said that? Oh, okay. Well, no, now we're going to agree with
There's him. Really no... There's no reason to get any of those Democrats on the committee on record as saying we won't vote for him. That's already a given. Everybody knows Kamala Harris is not going to vote yes.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.